Hello.
Hi, Troy.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. How are you this morning?
I'm good, thanks.
You're all over on the West Coast. Where exactly?
I'm in LA, specifically, in the Valley.
Excellent. Cool. All right. Well, let's get started. We'll start with your year of graduation, including if that was like spring or fall or summer, and your major.
I graduated in May 2013, and my major was music business. And I was on the entrepreneur track.
Excellent. Cool. And that's right, you took a class with me, didn't you?
Yeah, that was a rough summer, but I made it through.
Thank
It was actually a really good class.
you. Statistics, right?
Yes, statistics. Can't remember the title of the class, but I just remember it was statistics, and
Officially
it was
data management statistics,
yeah, it was good. I learned a
yeah.
lot in there.
Cool. And by the way, what was your primary instruments while at Berkeley?
Oh, voice.
Nice. All right. So, how about you tell us about your job right now? What do you do?
Okay, great. I work for a digital marketing company that most of its clients are plastic surgery offices, and I'm a front-end developer there. So we build websites, we do search engine optimization, we do blog content writing. What
I'm
else
sorry,
do we
did you
do?
say plastic surgery that you
Yes.
work for? Okay. And just so the listeners may be less tech-savvy aware, front end means like what the other person looking at the web actually sees.
Yeah, exactly. So the technologies that I use and the tools that I use are HTML, CSS, JavaScript. We use WordPress for content management and what else? Yeah, so yeah, that's basically it. Whatever you see on the website that we build, that's what I did. I mean, if I built it, we have like three or four people that do what I do there, and then people do lots of other things there. I was trying to remember what else we do. I think it's a lot, but basically it's just whatever is gonna help drive more patients to their office is why they hire us. And
Sure. And what's the name of
so
your company?
that's what we do.
Yeah, what's the name of your company, if you don't mind?
It's called NKP Medical.
Just like three letters, NKP
Yep.
Medical. Now, is NKP solely a medical marketing company, or are they like a large multi-service operation and you're in their marketing area?
No, it's kind of a small, medium company. I think we've got about 50 people there. And it's just solely digital marketing.
Gotcha. And are your clients, you mentioned being the LA area, are your clients all local or is this like a national level?
Yeah, it's actually national, and sometimes a lot, actually surprisingly a lot of times international, with like a base here or an office here. And I've seen a lot of, I recently did a website for an office in Canada. A lot of them have like a Beverly Hills office and then a Dubai office.
Okay.
I've seen that a lot. And what else I've seen? Yeah, so but other than that, it's I mean, the majority of it's domestic, like all around the United States.
Sure. Now, when you're assigned, it sounds like you get assigned to either build something for scrap. From scratch, or I imagine maybe sometimes take something old and make it look a lot better.
Yeah, so we offer a lot of services as far as the design aspect of it. Sometimes they just want us to take over their website, and what I do, I mean, everyone has their own processes, but what I try to do is just skim through the entire site and just mimic every tiny little thing about it so that it's basically unnoticeable, you know, like the difference between their site and ours. And
So in other words, in quote, the back end, in other words, you're totally right to get the computer code might be totally different, but the user thinks it's the same.
Right, exactly. And, you know, like the reason why we do that is because of the SEO stuff. It gives us an opportunity to go through each and every page and
That's search engine optimization.
Yeah, right. I'm learning more about it. I didn't know much about it before, but I'm learning more about it, and it's really interesting. It's always a moving target, and it's always changing. So
in other words, when somebody Googles plastic surgery or nose job or whatever, you want your client's site to pop up early.
Right, and more specifically, like in their area, because you know it's probably, imagine, more convenient to find someone good in your area. So there's a lot of tools that we use to get proper search results and moved up the page. We're actually really good at it, and I'm starting to delve more into what we do on that front.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's all very interesting.
Now, can I ask, like, would you get a, because sounds like a very project-based employment, although let's be clear, you are on salary?
Yeah, that's correct. I'm full-time and salary there. And it moves very quickly. Like, I've got, on average, I would say, like, 2 to 3 days to build a website before I have another project that I've got to get done.
And when you're building a website, is it basically all you, or are you working with, you know, one other person, five other people? How does that?
Yeah, it's actually a really, there's a lot of steps involved. So as far as what I'm concerned, my day-to-day is I'm looking for a design from a designer that's already been sent out and approved by the client. So I've got a few different Photoshop files that I work from.
Okay.
I get all that material together and start working on it.
So essentially somebody paints a pretty picture and says, make it look like this. And you're like, yes, sir.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
it's interesting, actually. I'm starting to get a feel for which designers I like their approach to things.
Mm-hmm.
And some that I don't. some are more experienced than others, and some have more. It's just really interesting to me to be able to tell just by looking at a design how much experience someone has with actually building a website.
Oh, right.
Because of all that knowledge that they have about what's reasonable, what's viable to be actually coding it. And
people where you know that they know their stuff, and people where you feel they painted a pretty picture without really knowing what's easy to make or what's going to work well.
Right, exactly. I've learned so much. When I started there, the first week was like a crash course, and then
by the way, when did you start there?
In August, August 3rd this year.
Of 2015.
Oh, yes. Sorry, of 2015.
Perfect. Now, you said there are about 50 people at your company?
Yeah, roughly.
So,
yeah.
Could I ask, of those 50 people, how many do your job? Or something, yeah, 90% similar to your job?
I think 3 or 4 other people.
Gotcha. So you're not alone, but you're one of a handful of people, or about 10%.
Right, and there's not much collaboration. It's just, I mean, me and the designer do the most collaboration.
Right.
You know, I'm asking them questions, asking them to, you know, like a lot of times we'll have like a basic idea moving to get started, but there's content missing, or there's like banners missing that we've been waiting for content for, or whatever. So when it comes time for that stuff, I'm going back to them and ask them for things that I need. If it's, you know, like, I'm not much of a designer, I'm getting better at it, but it's more time efficient for me to, you know, like, if I get a request, and the salesperson doesn't know my, you know, all my capabilities, they'll ask me for something that's more design oriented. And if it's beyond something that I can do, I go to the designer, just, can you do this? It'll take you like a quarter of the time it'll take me to do it.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And then what happens once you have built the web page? Is it done, or does it now go to the back end people?
Actually, like, we have the back end already set up for the most part.
Okay.
With WordPress. Uh-huh. So actually, when I'm done, I check off a box on a workflow. We have a couple of different workflow websites that we use. One's called Trello.
A workflow website is basically something your company uses internally to track how each project is coming along, correct?
Yeah, mm-hmm, exactly. We've got one that's proprietary to us that we built. And then we've got Trello, which is, I think it's like a freemium service. I haven't looked at their pricing, but it's good.
Freemium, you get a basic version for free, and if you want the advanced version, you pay money.
Right, yeah. I imagine that's what it is, because it's so simple and straightforward, and I've seen other stuff like that. But anyway, like, that's what we use.
So basically, you say, I've built it. You check the box.
Yeah, and then it goes to two different levels of QA, quality assurance.
Quality assurance. That's actually what my wife does for her career. Not on websites, but she does software QA.
Yeah, it's really necessary, because once you're knees deep in something, you can't really see your own mistakes or things that you've missed. So, you know, you try to. I have my own QA process that, you know, as I'm going through it, I'm, you know, keeping an eye out for things that just come up frequently in the QA feedback. So I try to get ahead of that, but, you know, when you're
like, it's much faster,
got, like, 2 days to get something, a complex site built and sent to QA.
Of course.
And sometimes things get missed, but
no, I mean, something easy, like, and obvious, it's faster for you to catch it than for the person up in the next stage to catch it.
Oh, they're really good. They'll find, like, sometimes I know it for me. It's like, sometimes it's like medicine for me. Like, I know it's good. I know it's thing, but that's just part of it.
I'm sorry. We actually cut out for just a moment. The last thing I heard was, it's like medicine for you. Do you mind just saying that again?
Sure. Actually, let me think of another way to put it. I guess I'm just trying to say that the QA process is not enjoyable, but it's good. It's it pushes me to be more detail oriented, and it pushes me to do my own QA process in more depth, so that I don't have to be on someone else's time schedule, you know, making updates and stuff.
Sure.
So it's a learning process like everything else.
Can I ask, so you say you're salaried in full time.
Yeah.
Is that a 40-hour full-time job, a larger hour full-time job?
Actually, what's really good about this company is they're really good about giving you just 40 hours of work a week.
Okay.
The culture there is like, at, you know, we go from 7 to 4. At 4 o'clock, the office manager is coming around, making sure if someone's lingering around to lock up and stuff. So it, there's kind of like a culture of like it's time to go home. Like you can, if you want to work extra on stuff, you can, but it's just not, they don't pressure you to. So it's good.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, like in January, you know, in December business was slow, so we were kind of working on internal stuff, and there was a lot of downtime. And January hit, and we were all bogged down. Every single person at the company was just overloaded with all the new business that was coming in. So there were a lot more occasions where people worked after hours there, but even then, it wasn't like the culture at a lot of other companies I've seen
Or like a
where,
startup.
right, no, it's not like that at all. It's really kind of laid back, but you know, while you're there, I think this helps too. While you're there, you squeeze every hour for what you can get done, and so that's how it works there.
Gotcha. And hey, do you mind sharing, what do you like about your job?
Oh
Because that
yeah,
was a requisite
there's
for doing these interviews, right? You had to at least to reasonably enjoy
yeah,
your job too.
absolutely. Yeah, actually, I really lucked out. There's so many things I do like about it. I mean, the job itself, the building websites, is something that I got the bug for while I was in Berkeley. I took a couple of classes there.
Classes at Berkeley?
Yeah.
Okay.
So
So you
that
enjoyed
got
it?
me interested in it, and then I started out after school just taking one course or another, free, paid. Some were kind of expensive, some were cheap, some were meetups, just any kind of. I just and I did I asked a lot of questions of people who were doing this type of
Cool.
work.
We'll actually get into how you got this job in a little
Sure.
bit, but I'm so curious. Here you are now, but you're certainly convincing you enjoy.
Yeah, sure. So, it's mainly autonomous what I do. I don't really have to collaborate too much with other people. I mean, I enjoy that, but there's something that happens when I get into a groove and I can listen to podcasts or I can listen to music and just kind of zone out and just, I don't know. There's a lot of, I think it's, have you heard this book called Flow by this, I think, Dutch psychologist? He talks about states of flow, and I get into that state a lot at my job, where time kind of stop seems to not exist. You forget yourself, you forget just about everything, and just focus on the problem at hand, and it's really enjoyable that way. Second thing
Cool.
is I'm always learning something new every day from my colleagues, and you know, if I get a design that's a little ambitious, I get excited because it's an opportunity for me to challenge myself.
Cool.
I guess those are the main things that I can think of right now that make it really enjoyable for me.
Excellent. All right, well, let's take it back to 2013, then. You graduated this spring, correct?
Right.
And so there you are, graduating from Berkeley. By the way, are you from LA originally?
No, I'm from Michigan originally.
Okay. So there you are, about to graduate Berkeley or just graduated, staring out into the big scary world. You'd built apparently take a couple website building classes, but what are you thinking at that moment? And you were a music business major.
Yeah, I didn't really have the means to go to New York right away or to come here, and I had no savings or anything, so I was looking at just getting a job right away out of school. I was looking at everything under the sun, to be honest.
So not just music, but you needed to make some money.
Yeah, and I kind of had a hunch that it wasn't going to be music at first, or maybe for a few years. And I kind of already had an idea that the web design, web development was what I was heading towards. So I was just looking for something to keep me, you know, to keep me afloat until I got to this point in my life. So I looked. I found a part-time job in music, actually doing sales for orchestra.
Oh, by the way, when you say you looked, was this a nationwide job search, or were you living back in Michigan or in Boston?
I was kind of looking for moonshot opportunities all around, you know, mainly Chicago, New York, mm-hmm. LA. Kind of those were, you know, if something came up that looked appealing, I would go ahead and apply for it. Mm-hmm. Knowing that if it came through, that I would pursue it, but likely I should spend the bulk of my efforts in Boston. So that's what I did.
Right. Now, so again, the job that you got was?
Well, the first one I found was this part-time sales job at an orchestra. They were looking for subscriptions, people to sell subscriptions to the concert series.
Was that like commission or salary or both?
I really can't remember. I think it was hourly plus commission.
Gotcha.
That lasted about a month, and then I got a full-time job at an insurance company doing sales. That I was there for about a year or so, and then
base salary plus commission.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do you mind? It's okay if you don't want to share, but do you mind sharing approximately what your monthly income was looking like doing insurance sales? Yeah, insurance sales.
Yeah. $3,000 to $4,000. Like on good months, it was closer to $4,000. On bad months, it was closer to $3,000 or so.
So, all right. So something, you're definitely more than holding your own.
Right. Yeah. At the time there was so much happening at that time. I pretty much paid for college on my own with student loans. So the payments were kind of, and they still are kind of high.
Right.
So what looks like $3,000 at the time was what it felt like a lot less, because a lot of it was leaving, you know, my pocket.
Completely understood.
Yeah. So, it was like, I did survive, and, I was able to meet all my obligations and stuff, which was great. Like that was something that I was worried about while I was in school. Mm-hmm. You know, not knowing, like I had an uncle that went to college, but mostly my family was, besides the kids my age in the family, the adults, a lot of them didn't go to college, so I didn't have a lot of advice or feedback about what to expect. So in my mind, I was kind of pessimistic at that stage of my life, so I wasn't looking at any I was just looking at, like, what am I going to do to survive, like, right out of this? Oh.
Well, I don't think that's pessimistic. I think that's realistic. Pessimistic would have been you didn't go to college.
True. Yes.
You went. You got your degree. You made it.
Yeah, true. So I kind of did get – I did achieve what I expected. It just wasn't – It was thanks for pointing out. It was just really – realistic and pragmatic. So I got that job at the time. It wasn't everything, but it got me, you know, at least surviving and meeting my obligations, which I was thrilled to do because that was something I worried about.
Right, but not not your heart. It's not the ultimate thing you wanted to do, selling insurance.
No, but actually, you know, like I try to learn something from every job, even if it's just a hellish experience. I try to I've had some really crazy jobs, but I always try to take something out of it, even if it's something that, even if they're ideas that I create on my own, from the experience.
Do you buy insurance? How long were you selling insurance for?
Let's see. I got the job in July. Oh,
pretty soon after graduation.
Yeah, they had a month-long training process. So I started selling in August, and I left in, I want to say, May. The following May.
So, like 9 months later.
Yeah, about 9 months.
Okay. Do you mind sharing something you took from that job? You said that you always like to take something.
Yeah, I know they make you pass this state exam to get license. Mm-hmm. I did really well on it, so I know a lot about insurance, how it works, and so I feel like I'm never gonna get scammed by somebody. I'm gonna know, you know, what's a good deal with my insurance. What else? I was actually, I mean, sometimes in life you don't really know like what you did get out of something until you realize it. I was having a conversation with someone about politics, and they were talking about healthcare and how they think that if it was I forget, something to do with, they think it's a good idea that you can buy insurance in Michigan if you're living in LA. And I just, like,
oh yeah, yeah, because at the moment it's all done at the state level, and
right, yeah, some, and I just saw, like, I had a lot of background in it. It was car insurance that I was selling, but you know, the basic idea of risk pools just didn't occur to this person, and they, you know, they didn't think about it, and it's something that occurred to me, and
gotcha.
Yeah, so.
All
right, you know, there's a lot of there's a lot of ignorance about a lot of important things, and there's so much to take in and so much to learn about. Yep. And I feel like people get duped all the time. And if you can be duped a little bit less in life, then I think it's you've got something out of it. So yeah, that's what I got out of that job.
By the way, quick flashback. I almost forgot. How did you get your first two jobs, both selling the tickets part-time and then this insurance job? Was this just ad on Monster, Craigslist, or whatever, and you apply, or was this knowing somebody? Or?
Yeah, no, I didn't know anybody at those places, so it was, I think, Craigslist for the first one, and then the second job, I think, was a LinkedIn ad. They were looking for people, or maybe it was Craigslist too, or
gotcha. And you really just, you see the, but basically you see the ad, you apply, you're brought in for the interview.
Oh, you know what, actually there's a, I don't even know if this company is around anymore, but it was actually a recruiting firm that posted an ad somewhere, and I contacted them thinking that they were hiring, but recruiting agencies, this is what they do. They post an ad looking as if it's the actual company hiring, but then you apply for it and they contact you, and then you realize that you've got to go through them and go through the process.
And then, even if you go through them, I guess, do they make the final hiring, or do they then winnow you down to a field of two or three? And then,
no, they're incentivized to get as many people hired as they can, because they get paid based on how many people they bring to that company.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so they were this insurance company was growing at a massive rate, so they were really pushing to get people there. It was all like a whirlwind, honestly. Like I initially was just not into the idea of hearing them out about the job, but it was kind of coming down to the wire. Like I was running out of my savings, and I didn't, you know, it was a job or no job, and I didn't want to see what no job looked like, so I went for it.
Good for you. Now, you had mentioned that earlier that you like taking web classes. So were you doing that while you were selling insurance, like sell insurance by day and then by night?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So I was also doing freelance. Like, it wasn't that much of a thing for me. I was just, you know, reaching out to friends and stuff, asking if anyone needed a website so I can get some experience and a portfolio together. Mm-hmm. And
is doing it for them as a courtesy, I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I would charge a very small amount just to, you know, like, I learned from experience and from advice from other people that you either you just can't do work for free. There's something in your psychology that if you're doing work for free, you kind of, there's an inherent resentment built in, and it kind of skews your judgment and skews your decision making. So I always charge something just so that I feel like I've got a stake in the outcome.
Okay.
That's just how, you know, that's how I work. Other people might be able to do work for free and works out for them. But yeah, I always try to charge something. So that's what I was doing at the time. I was doing that kind of stuff, and then taking any kind of online courses I could find. If I could afford to, I would pay for a class. One class I tried to learn about back-end programming with a course that was really
back-end is all like managing the databases and really mm-hmm. the sort of more technical stuff.
Yeah, it's in the class that I was taking, it was more leaning towards software development.
Okay.
Or like web software. I took that. I learned a lot about actually like programming basics. But beyond that, it was just a lot to process, and it wasn't really, it wasn't structured well. So, after that, I kind of like was kind of gun shy about taking on, you know, paying for another class. So I did a lot of online free stuff where I could find it.
By the way, are there any good sites which you think back and you're like, yeah, this was online, it was free, and it was good, and I learned a lot? If so, I'm sure our listeners would be happy to hear that.
Yeah, I think it's so hard to keep track of. There's a lot out there, but I think it's Code School. They're really good. They have how it works is they have a video, and then they've got a practice module where it's like there's like three boxes. One is where you input the code they want you to write. Mm-hmm. The other is a prompt, like, you know, in text, or sometimes there's an image or something there. And then there's a results box.
Okay.
So you get, it's like instant, like the video's 2 minutes, you practice for 2 minutes, another 2 minute video. It's like quick succession like that. And for me, that really works because, I guess that's just how I learn.
That's actually very recommended educational strategies. You break things down into little pieces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I do. If there's something that I want to learn about and I just want to get the feel for it, and I don't have a lot of time or I don't have a lot of motivation to sit down and, you know, take out a whole weekend to learn something, or multiple weekends just hunkered down in the darkness in my room while it's sunny outside, I'll like on my lunch breaks go to Code School and just like dabble in something, get a feel for it. Just so that I, because so much of programming is like syntax and repetitive, just it's kind of like muscle memory, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Until you write a for loop like 100 times while looking at it, it's not, you know, it's not like intuitive. So you just have to do things over and over and over again until you kind of get a feel for it and how Yeah, Code School is really awesome for that. I tried Treehouse. They're paid. I didn't really like it that much.
Gotcha.
I tried using lynda.com, which I don't know if they're still offering this, Berkeley is, but they gave me a lifetime membership to
I'm sorry,
that.
what's the Lynda, Linda?
Actually, Lynda.
Lynda.
They're I don't really, that doesn't work for me either. It's too, their format's a lot longer and it's a lot more complicated. They don't have like embedded practice modules, so you've got to like create files outside of it, and you've got to watch like a 50-minute video and then try to remember what you saw if you didn't take notes. And
Well, I think it's great that you shopped around. You didn't just find one and say, oh, this online stuff isn't for me. You went and looked until you found something that had a style that worked for you.
It was kind of, I mean, if it was just a hobby, I probably would have given up on it. If I didn't know Code School was there, and I believed that Treehouse and Lynda were my options, I probably wouldn't have even gone with it. But I knew, like, I got a taste for this in school with a couple of courses, and I knew that it was something that if I found my way into it, I would be able to have a job that I liked, and that it would set me on a track to make decent money. So in my mind, it was like, and I didn't really like selling insurance, so it was a lot of motivation to find something that was going to work for me, because
Sure.
it was like I had to, and in my mind, I wasn't giving myself a choice. I didn't see a lot of other options for me,
Well,
so
right.
I
It would
knew
be, what, 40 years doing something you didn't like, or, or you
that.
suck it up for a year or two and then you find yourself in a good career like you did.
Right, exactly.
Now, you
So,
said you were doing insurance. Oh, sorry. Until. May of 2014, so that's still a little over a year before your current job. Can you tell me what happened then in May?
Sure, yeah. So, the insurance company, I wasn't getting along with management, and a lot of my colleagues were kind of getting fed up too. So we all kind of slowly we were dropping like flies, and I was like, well, it's time for me to leave too. I don't even know anyone here anymore. So, and I'm not enjoying it. I'm not getting along with management. The policies were getting more and more like turning us into robots, which I didn't enjoy at all.
You mean removing any discretion you had, like giving you pre-written scripts or
Yeah,
something?
exactly. And they just wanted the numbers. It was all numbers and charts and figures, and took the human aspect out of it completely. So yeah, that was a good motivation to move on to something else.
Did you start looking for a new job while you were still at your job, or did you?
Yeah, I was looking. I wasn't really having much success, but then one of my really good friends that I made at the insurance company, she found a job, a different sales job in Waltham, which is quite a trek if you don't have a car, but
Oh, yeah. About 10 miles west of Boston.
it's my commute was insane, but it at least gave me something new to do while I was still pursuing web stuff.
So, in other words, she found the job and then she said, hey, Troy, do you want to work here too?
Yeah, something I learned about Boston is that the sales network there, like the network of people that work in sales kind of things, like you all eventually meet each other because there's only so many kind of those jobs in Boston. And yeah, like it was actually like someone else that we worked with worked there and then brought her on, and then she brought me on, and it was a really small team, and there was a lot more freedom there.
And what were you
And
selling?
So this is, it was a strange service. it was an online divorce preparation service. And they did a couple of other things, but that's mainly, I had no idea that that even existed, but that's online what we were.
Divorce prep. I'm imagining, yeah. I'm imagining the cold call. Hi, are you interested in, you don't really love your spouse, do you?
It was so weird. I mean, it wasn't exactly cold calling.
I was joking.
But yeah, it was people that had been on our website and they dropped off for some reason or another. So our job was to call and find out why. You know, maybe they didn't trust it, or maybe they thought it wasn't for them, or maybe they. There were a lot of rules in place, so we were mainly just advising them on whether they were qualified to use it or not, because it only works for a very slim, you know, a sliver of, you know, the total divorces that happen every year.
I imagine it would have to be something where everybody agreed on doing the split. Yeah,
it had to be very, very amicable and very, very simple, very, very just the most straightforward thing. If there were any kind of complications or weird things happening with them, I kind of tried to steer them away from it and just let them know that, like, you're better off just going the traditional route. Like, this might work for you, but you might screw something up, and, you know, yeah, so it was more like, it was like half selling and half deterring people. Like, sometimes people really wanted to use it because it was cheaper, and I had to tell them, like, you know, like, you could pay for this and go through the whole process and it will not work for you anyway, so you just,
right,
it's a waste of time. So
were your earnings pretty comparable there to the other sales job?
Yeah, I mean, that was a motivation to leave. My earnings at the insurance company were squeezing us more and more, and was really uncomfortable. So,
by the way, do you mind sharing the names of the insurance company and this online divorce company?
You know, I can't remember.
That's all good.
No, I mean, I remember the second one. I don't want to.
That's fine.
The first one, honestly, like, I could tell you what their name was at the time, but they've changed names like 3 or 4 times since I left. So.
Oh, that's funny. Never mind then. Okay, so you're there for how long?
The
divorce place.
Yeah, that one. I was there for. I think I was there for a year. No. I was there from like May until the following December.
December of 2014?
Yeah.
So.
I think?
Yeah, because you started there in May 2014.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So, okay, again, what, 8 months or so?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of that, it was summer. In the middle of that, it was summer. Mm-hmm. And I took an online course. It was the best one that I had found. It was called Thinkful. And how they have it set up was they've got a mentor that you meet with once a week or email with any questions. And then you're going through a curated course, basically like the best of free courses on the internet, and then augmented with their internal stuff that they developed. So I went through that. It was really good. I learned a lot. And then
another web development course.
Right. Exactly. So that took 3 months. By the end of that, it was like September, October, maybe, when I finished.
Okay.
And then, I was just really pushing to find any kind of work doing that. And it was still like, you know, it took a while. And in December I moved to New York. A friend from college said that she had a job for me if I wanted to move there. And I just wanted to try New York. I really, like, people asked me at the time, like, why I went there. And I think it was just not Boston, and it was close. and it was, you know, like, everybody, you know, a lot of people want to try to live in New York. Sure. It's like a dream of,
This was a friend, was it old college friend or someone else?
Yeah.
College mm-hmm. friend?
Yeah, we became friends in school, and then she moved on. I think she graduated a little bit before me.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't seen her for a while, and I told her I was moving there, and she was working at a manufacturing company doing sales for them, like B2B sales. And
business to business sales.
Right, yeah. It was
so another sales job, but this time in New York.
Right, exactly. New York was a real struggle for me, but it was fun while it lasted, and then it turned into a nightmare by the end. No, actually, it got a little bit. It was starting to look good there toward the end. While I was there from December until August.
And by the way, when you're talking about it turning into a nightmare, starting to look good, are you talking about the job specifically or your entire life?
I think just my time in New York. Like, when I first moved there, it was new and exciting, and I was thinking about all these possibilities of things I could do there. And then about 3 or 4 months into it, it was just a grind. Like, it was the middle of winter. I was working at this job. I wasn't doing that great at it. I was confused as to what my strategy was going to be to get customers and stuff. I was kind of like at the end of my rope with sales. Like, I was just getting progressively worse and worse at it with each sales job that I took, which is strange. You know, like, you're supposed to be getting better and better at something.
I've had that happen. I remember.
Yeah.
You know, it's because initially there's the newness, and that kind of gives you an adrenaline boost, and that wears off. And if it's not something you're really into, nothing replaces it.
Yeah, I think that just, you know, like at the beginning of this whole journey, like right out of school, the sales stuff that I was doing and my web development learning track that I was on were kind of like parallel. They were working with each other and for each other. And then while I was in New York, they just started branching off severely, and they weren't helping, you know, like, one was hindering the other and one wasn't helping the other. So I was kind of like at the end of my rope with, you know, my plans. And I knew that I had to really buckle down and figure something out. And I kind of did, which, you know, like, I don't know, like, I'm not a very superstitious person, but every time in my life where I've gotten to that point, I feel like I'm just like jumping into this like dark abyss.
Mm-hmm.
I know I need to, and I just have to trust that I'll land in a good spot, and I usually do, but I wouldn't know, like, I don't know until I jump. So I just sorry to be poetic about it, but
no, that's good. So tell me about your jumping then.
Yeah, I was there in New York, and I was kind of like, this isn't working. Like, I've really got to figure something out with my life, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's really not another inch on this road that I've been on with sales jobs. Like, I really am not good at it. It's becoming obvious, so I've got to figure something out. So I had a friend in L.A., and she had been pushing me to move here for years and years.
Could I ask? Just kind of another Berklee College of Music.
Yes, exactly. By this point, it was her and a couple of other people that had graduated and came back here, and were kind of telling me how great it was and like painting this great picture of LA, which was totally not hyperbole at all. Like, everything they described was like, LA's awesome. So I'm glad I did end up here. But yeah, so I was in New York and I had this friend telling me, like, you're not happy doing this type of stuff. I can see that. And you're actually good at the web stuff now. Why don't you, you know, try to look at LA, what opportunities are here. And I had been looking for jobs in New York with web development and not really getting anywhere. It's just, I don't know what was happening there, but in LA, I was sending resumes out just kind of like.
So you moved first and you figure you'll move and then you'll find a job.
No, actually, I was sending resumes out just like kind of half of them to New York and like local cities on the East Coast where I think I might want to go. I was looking at Boston. I was looking at New York since I was there. And then I was sending stuff to LA, not really thinking like, oh, you know, I've heard there's this like myth that you don't get a job in LA until you live here. And so I was like, this is just something to keep me moving forward. You know, like, I didn't really think it was going to turn into anything, but I started lining up interviews here and started to go through that process. And like two or three interviews later, I landed this job remotely from the opposite coast. They sent me an offer letter and brought me out here and stuff.
When you say you lined up interviews, were these like interviews on Skype or did you actually fly out to LA?
No, it was just on like phone interviews and Skype interviews.
Okay. And they said, okay, you're hired.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked because, you know, like I was saying, like, these were all like, this was a moonshot idea to send resumes to LA. I didn't actually think it was going to turn into anything. Now that I've got this job offer, now I actually have to do something with it. You know, like, I have to move across the country. It was so, it was very stressful, but exciting.
How much time from when you got the offer till you started? What, a month or?
Yeah, it was really quick. They were really looking for someone. I don't know what the urgency was, but it worked out for me.
Well, they're looking to hire because they need somebody, right?
Yeah, exactly.
If you said you're one of like maybe four people doing what you do, imagine if you only had three people in January.
No, yeah, the workload would have been, people would have been stressed out. It's true. Sometimes when it gets to that point, I'm like, they're gonna start hiring people soon, just because it gets crazy. So yeah, I mean, they needed somebody and they thought I was a good fit, and it worked out for everybody, I think.
And you're still there.
So yeah, I'm still there. I'm happy to be there. I feel like I'm contributing, you know, a little bit extra than what the day-to-day job stuff is. So that's a good feeling.
And by the way, is there, I was going to ask, is in a few years, do you see yourself doing the same thing? Is there like a next step up you think of taking? Or if you're totally happy doing it, I mean, hey, look, I'm a professor. I'm going to be doing what I'm doing for a long time.
Yeah, no, I think I'm going to be doing this for a while. I don't, you know, I can't say that I've tried everything, but I've tried a lot of things. And the only other thing that was remotely possibly as, you know, money-wise equivalent, like, would have been the sales for me, and I wasn't good at it anyway. So
right, that's sales if you're really good at it.
Right, if I was really – and I saw my they weren't bad jobs. It just wasn't like, you know, I saw my coworkers doing really well, and they had different personalities than I did and different – just they're wired different than I was.
Oh, I completely get it. You need to do a job that fits in with what your personality is. That's absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So yeah, I'm going to be doing this for a while. As far as like next steps, I'm always looking for what I want to do next and what I think that is like when the time is right, I want to do something that's more creative and more more long-term project based. Like right now, like everything's a quick turnaround, and you don't feel like you've put your heart into something really. It's just kind of surface right. level, just get it done and move on. It would be really, I think it'd be really interesting and enjoyable to work on a more long-term project and have some creative input into it. I may or may not be at the point where I can take something like that on right now, but I think that's what I'm working towards.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, it sounds like you're on a great path. Let's move on to the third part of the interview. So let me ask, what, if any, thing is your current relation to music?
I make music almost every day on my own. That's pretty much it.
Well, you make music? Meaning you compose or you sing?
Yeah, so I don't know what to call it. I mean, I've got a laptop and I've got Ableton on it, and I've got a keyboard, a microphone. So I write, I produce tracks, I sing on them.
Good for you.
That's pretty much it.
Cool.
It's fun. Like I imagine that, you know, it's always in the back of my mind that I want to pursue that. And while I was in college, I got this idea that it was going to be something that would take off really quickly for me. That's the whole reason I went to Berkeley in the first place, was to kind of like speed up the process. But something that I've learned, and I don't know if this is a fact or if it's something that just helps me have a better perspective on it, is that it's just a really long thing. It's like a lifetime commitment. And like right now, what I'm doing with music is completely satisfying for me, and I'm getting better at it, and I'm trying to push myself to be more creative with it and more free with it. I think it's like with my job, it's really linear. It's really what's the word I'm looking for?
Yeah, it's a straightforward regimented process, right? You know, like, what to do.
There's you know, like, it's black or white. It's really mm-hmm. there's not a lot of interpretation with, you know, like, it's either working or it's not working. Like, there's no in between. So there's that side of me, and that's pulling me in that direction, and the music is pulling me in the seemingly opposite direction. So it feels like with these two endeavors, I'm kind of being expanded outwards, and my capacity for both is being stretched out, and I can start to see how what I'm learning in one area can influence the other.
Interesting.
So I think it's interesting and a fun life to live, where you've got two seemingly opposite passions and endeavors that you're pursuing. I feel like somewhere in the middle, I'm kind of balanced in between those two things, those two like seeming opposite kind of
uh-huh.
modalities.
Sure. All right. So next question for you. You mentioned a little bit of taking classes involving web design at Berkeley, because mm-hmm. I want to know, obviously you went to Berkeley, which gives a Bachelor of Music degree, not a computer mm-hmm. science degree or whatever else.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But thinking about your current job, is there anything you feel that your Berkeley education did well to prepare mm-hmm. you for your job?
Yeah. I've thought about this a few times, not in depth, but I think it's safe to say that the approach to like composing or arranging stuff like that is really helpful for me. Just being able to start with a clean slate and just go piece by piece. I think learning music that way helped me. Especially, I think the thing that I can equate it to most of how it feels is writing counterpoint. Because it's very structured. There's a lot of rules, but there's also a little bit of room for a little to a lot of room of creativity involved. But it's got to be in this framework. It's very structured.
I'm sure the counterpoint professors would be thrilled to hear this.
Yeah, I really loved those classes. Now that I'm thinking about it, it makes sense if web development and counterpoint feel the same to me. There must be something similar to them. I think and also just being able to be disciplined. Being at Berkeley taught me a lot about self-discipline and self-autonomy. And being able to really like learn how my brain works, and that was very, very important. Before I went there, I was kind of sporadic and kind of very easily distractible, and it was very hard for me to focus. And it still is, really, to be honest, pretty hard for me to focus, but at least I have strategies now.
Well, you found the place with the little 2-minute modules, right?
Right, exactly. If that says anything. I think Berkeley taught me a lot about, I think the most important thing was self-discipline and strategies for just getting stuff done. Like you've got, you know, you've got nine classes, they are all demanding 5 hours of work from you, and you've only got like 6 hours after school each day. What are you going to do about it? You know, you've just got to buckle down and figure it out. So that was really an important lesson for me. I think that was the biggest one.
Gotcha. Oh, that's a very good answer. Oh, by the way, do you remember which classes had you building websites? Because you'd also mentioned that.
Yeah, one was, I can't remember the name of the classes.
Or the professor. It's okay.
I can't remember. No, I mean, it's weird because I really liked her, and she teaches,
was it Pam Kerensky?
Yes, it was. Thank you.
Okay.
I was picturing her face and not the name was, I was thinking Anne or something, but yeah, it was Pam. She taught, there were two levels of classes for that. The first one was basic.
Computer applications, right?
No, it wasn't computer applications. It was, I think it was just called web design.
Okay.
And then the second one was, web development, which was a little bit more advanced topics, but
did those classes give you a good footing?
Oh yeah, absolutely. As far as like the technical basis, they were very good classes. And I still like it, you know, like sometimes even if I'm trying to remember like the difference between padding and margin, for instance, I flash back to classes where she was pointing out the difference between it, or she had a very good example with a photo or something. Obviously it was the basis for everything that I built upon. So
cool. All right. Now the flip side, which is of course, you went to Berkeley knowing it gives one degree, a Bachelor of Music degree.
Yep.
Not a computer science degree or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But is there anything when you look back at your Berkeley education and even think of everything you've been through in your career so far and think like, you know, gee, it would have been really nice to have learned more about this or known something, and Berkeley could have taught it to me, and they didn't. You know, given that you were getting a Bachelor of Music degree, is there anything you sort of regret not learning
at Berkeley? Actually, yeah. One, I think there's a lot of science about creativity and self-management, and I really wish that more psychology courses were part of the curriculum. Psychology, maybe creativity, something to do with those two things, because they're everything with how, you know, I had to learn what works for me, what doesn't, and I feel like I would have had an easier time if I went through a course where I learned that, you know, in a semester versus a few years of a hit or miss kind of struggling toward, you know, realizing that this is how my mind works and this is how my creativity works. I always thought that was strange. Like, we learn a lot of technical skills at Berkeley, and I think there can be I think there's a little bit of room for more, more humanities, kind of angle. I know we have the liberal arts classes and stuff, but I think just Berkeley is uniquely in a position to develop something that's unique, like a very unique class to do with creativity and psychology or something.
Okay. That's so. Excellent feedback. In fact, I intend to pass that on to the relevant people.
Great.
Berkeley actually hired 2 full-time psychology professors this past year.
Great. Maybe in a few years I'll be able to take an online course or something.
Cool. That's a great answer. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right. So next to last, great. You know, you worked some less than fun jobs for a few years. You kept your head above water, which is very commendable, by the way.
Thank you.
And even more commendable that while doing that, you kept your eyes on the prize.
Yeah, I think that was hard, but
of course it's hard.
Yeah, it was. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it at all. It was a lot of nights, you know, staying in on a Friday night, working until 3 a.m. on a trying to solve a coding problem that, you know, like you don't know even what you're doing, or spending a lot of summer weekends indoors with the windows open, listening to good music, finding anything to keep yourself in the seat. That's the battle, is to just keep yourself doing it long enough to where it starts paying off. And I didn't know it was going to pay off, you know, like there was no guarantee with it. That was such a good life lesson for me. I really, like, somewhere along the line, I got really attached to certainty, and it never helped me. So I'm glad that I kind of shook that off a little bit, and I learned that, you know, like, you're never certain of anything. As long as you're inching towards something, you're making progress towards something, you know, you got to feel happy about that, and you've got to feel proud of that. So,
yeah, I was about to ask if you had advice for other folks who haven't yet found their path, or, you know, alumni are still searching for that job like you are, maybe graduates kind of play the big scary world, but I think you may have just given it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just, like at some point, hopefully sooner than later, you're going to realize that you've got yourself to count on in this life, and you've got to figure out what kind of a, you know, like what kind of a life you want to live. Like I had always, you know, all growing up, I had always thought that, well, I don't know when I'm going to die, so I might as well live for today, you know, and that makes sort of sense. Until you get to a certain age, and then you start thinking, wait, I've got like 60, 70 years in front of me. What do I want that time to look like? You know, like, I don't want that to not be enjoyable. So if I can spend a couple of years and sacrifice a little bit and get closer to something that feels like it's satisfying to me, that seems to make sense. And so, I don't know. It wasn't an obvious lesson, but I'm glad I learned it. And moving forward, I'll keep going that route.
Good for you. All right, so final question is, do you have anything you feel we miss? You're on the microphone here. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
I guess kind of just one last thing that helped me mature a little bit and get to this point was that now I'm losing it. What was I going to say? Just to kind of like be grateful for what's going on at that time. You know, like so much of my time while I was in school, I have a regret about this. Like I was looking, you know, after graduation, not really knowing what was going to happen. It was nerve wracking, and I didn't know, you know, how to feel about it. So instead of feeling optimistic, I was kind of, you called it realistic, but at times it was pretty pessimistic, and I really wasn't, at times I missed a lot while I was in school. Like I could have enjoyed myself more. Instead I was worrying about the future, and that's just pointless. The future's kind of, you can't do much about it. You can try to set up a little bit beforehand and try to, you know, set yourself up as much as possible, but in the end it's going to unfold as it's going to. So I'm learning how to enjoy where I'm at, and that's been really good. And it's also really good for when I want to learn something new and push myself, you know, like sitting down in my room on weekends, making that sacrifice again, doesn't feel so grueling, you know, when I remember that I actually can find a way to enjoy it.
Gotcha.
I guess that's my only other thing that I would mention.
Oh, that's very good. Well, hey, Troy, I very much enjoyed our conversation here.
Yeah, me too. And thanks.
Look for a message from me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And best of luck. I look forward to hearing how everything progresses for you.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
All right. Well, take care.
Take care, too. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.